Today we're talking about the gut microbiome and the brain. Stay tuned to learn more about the connection between the two. In the Brain Podcast, we blend medical insights with behavior design principles to empower you in creating brain-healthy habits. We aim to demystify brain health, enhance focus, and reduce the risk of dementia. Join us as we unlock the secrets of the brain, all backed by science and fueled by behavior design.
I'm Dr. Shabnam Das Kaur. I'm a functional medicine doctor and certified tiny habits coach. I teach people how to improve their focus, get rid of brain fog, and reduce their risk of dementia.
And I'm Andrea Spiros. I'm a behavior design consultant and speaker. I work with organizations to harness the power of high-performance habits to increase engagement, resilience, and well-being. So today we're talking about the gut microbiome. And let's start out by just, what is it that phrase is thrown around, but what really is the gut microbiome?
So the microbiome is the, you know, we have all these wonderful microbes in our bodies. And today we're talking about the gut microbiome and brain health. Now, in the gut, there are all these different bacteria, viruses, archaea, fungus, and helminths, and parasites. But most of the research has been done only on bacteria, mostly. That's why we talk about the gut bacteria. And the term microbiome actually includes all the genetic material of all the microorganisms present. However, most of the conversations are about only the gut microbiome, whereas there are bacteria in other parts of the body as well. Like, I'm a former OBGY. We know that there are bacteria in the vagina, even in the pregnant uterus, which we used to think was sterile. So every organ, actually, even the brain, is supposed to have a microbiome. However, today our conversation is only on the gut microbiome. We are not going to talk about viruses and helminths and parasites, because one reason is we don't know a lot about them yet.
And let's talk quickly about bacteria, because when most people hear the term bacteria, they think bacteria equals bad. But you just said there's bacteria in the gut microbiome and it doesn't sound bad. So just say a little bit more about that.
Oh, yeah, that is so interesting and important. So, Andrea, because I was a physician in India, so in third world developing countries, infection was always a big problem for us. So we were always like sanitized and this and antibiotics. So for a long time, we didn't know about these bacteria that we actually cohabit with them. So these gut bacteria, I'm only talking about the gut bacteria now, they have actually evolved along with us as human beings. And all of them are not harmful. What you rightly pointed out is we are familiar with bacteria causing bacterial infections like pneumonia and urinary tract infections. Those are the harmful ones. But these are these wonderful creatures, the more than 2 kilograms of it in our gut alone.
Wow.
And we did not know about them until some years ago when the, you know, the gut microbiome studies started coming out and the technology advanced to a level where we could actually study them. It wasn't possible to study them before when we didn't have the technology. So it's been quite a few years now. I think it was 2002 when the gut microbiome studies first started coming out. So now we have learned a whole lot more, but we are still not there yet. Like, it is still, it's very fascinating and interesting how we live with all these other organisms, not only in the gut, on our skin, in our eyes, and inside the mouth, and so many places. And for so many years, we did not know anything about them and what they were doing for our health.
Wow. And it's a new frontier of learning that we live with these other organisms that are actually, I love your phrase, cohabitating with, like, it's mutually beneficial. So that's what we're talking about today. These beneficial, potentially beneficial organisms that are in our gut and how they relate to the brain health. And we have 3 foundations of brain health here: optimal blood pressure, optimal blood glucose, and low levels of chronic inflammation. So share with us how the gut microbiome relates to these foundations of brain health.
Yeah, so multiple studies have shown that, the type of gut bacteria that are present in our gut decides, for example, how much of a food we use up. For example, let us say carbohydrate containing food. Now, we have talked on our podcast episodes in the past about having optimal levels of blood glucose and how blood glucose levels are connected to our carbohydrate intake. And the amount of carbohydrate intake that is optimal for each person may be very different. So there are some gut microbes which actually decide how much of the carbohydrates we are going to process and how much of that is going to, obviously, how we process the carbohydrates in the gut is also going to decide our blood glucose levels. And of course, that's another, like, there are several other layers of complexity. Also, blood pressure. These are newer studies coming up where there are certain. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole because we're going to have another episode
Yeah, we'll
going.
do a deep dive. We'll do a deep
Yeah,
dive.
so for now, I just want to state that blood pressure is also related to the gut microbiome. But the biggest impact actually is on, you mentioned low levels of chronic inflammation. And we will do a deeper dive into this. We have done it in the past about food. So food is one of the biggest sources of inflammation for us in our bodies. And that is something that has a huge impact on the gut microbiome. So all three foundations of brain health are impacted by the gut microbiome. And that is really fascinating.
And how does someone know? So they're all related, but how does someone know if there's a problem in their gut microbiome?
Okay, so first is many people may not have any symptoms specific to the gut. They may have something like, let us say, an autoimmune condition. Let us say it is psoriasis or rheumatoid arthritis. Now, studies have shown that almost every disease, I think if a study has not shown a disease, it's because it's not been studied. So every disease that we have is related to a change in the gut microbiome. Now, whether the change happens as a cause or is it an effect, that is a part that we still need more studies to know. So it's basically when I say cause or effect is it the chicken or the egg? Like, which is happening first? Is the gut microbiome changing before we develop the disease? Or is the disease causing the change in the gut microbiome? Now, right now, we don't have a way where we can, continuously sample the gut microbiome or when we are not symptomatic of any disease, when we have a disease, and then we can see over a period of time what is happening exactly. But maybe in the future, we'll have technologies which will help us sort of predict diseases before they actually develop. So one is if someone has an autoimmune condition or even an autoimmune condition like inflammatory bowel disease, like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's, those are conditions, autoimmune conditions of the gut. So those, obviously, many people are symptomatic. And as you know, many of these autoimmune conditions, symptoms wax and wane. So that autoimmunity is one area. And if someone has gut symptoms, for example, bloating, diarrhea, constipation, feeling of fullness very early, soon after a meal, or as we have talked about it, food sensitivities. Sometimes people may, for something, for example, something like gluten. We have talked about gluten sensitivity on one of our episodes here, where the symptoms may not even be in the gut. It is like a headache or foggy thinking after, eating gluten-containing food. So that would also, if we do test the gut microbiome, that would also show up as some abnormality. So basically, if someone does, what I mean to say is someone does not have any gut symptoms, does not have autoimmunity, does not have some major illness, it doesn't mean necessarily the gut is 100% healthy. So in my practice, obviously, Andrea, people don't come to me because they are healthy. They come to me because they have a problem. Mental health conditions is another big one, and gut microbiome has such an intimate relation with that. So I assume everyone has a gut that needs to become healthier if they are already healthy, or they need a major overhaul. It would depend on their symptom levels and what they are dealing with.
Exactly. And I know you have a really helpful framework about how our listeners can think about the gut. Because right now, I think if we polled everybody, they just think it's a long tube that's, down there. And now I've got a picture of it's filled with some, bacteria and probably some used food. But how do we think about it in terms of all these microbes and creating a healthier space for it?
I use a rather simplified, sort of a framework when I explain to my patients. Because what happens, Andrea, is because of all the stuff that people read nowadays, it's like I have, good bugs or bad bugs in my gut. Now, the fact is, it's not as simple as that. So, how I talk about it is, number one, who is there? So, these are which types of bacteria are there? And just because a certain bacteria is there doesn't mean it is causing any harm or benefit necessarily. So studies have shown that some which were thought to be harmful bacteria, and I'm using air quotes for harmful, actually have been lying around in the gut and not doing any harm. And so it's very hard to say this is bad and this is good. The other thing is it's the gut microbiome functions like a some people call it an Amazon rainforest, and because I am from originally from Mumbai, which is a big city, so you can look at it in two ways. It's like a how a big city functions. For example, you are in LA, so in a big city there are so many different services. For example, there is the trash collection service, there is electricity, there is all these for me in Alberta, snow removal. So let us say one day the trash collection service malfunctions and doesn't come and collect trash. Then everything else gets affected, right? So when we think of the gut microbiome, it's like everything is working like a perfectly tuned orchestra, like how a city functions, or if you're looking at a forest, it's like each part of the forest is related to everything else. So it's like that. So number one is who is there? So which are the gut bacteria that are present? The next is who are their friends? So the thing is, this is the very interesting, intricate, and complex relationship that goes on. One type of gut bacteria may produce a certain chemical or a metabolite, which impacts another gut bacteria. So what are the who are their friends? That is basically the way I talk about it. And then the third thing is, what are they doing together? So, like I said, when one type of gut bacteria produces certain, metabolites, that impacts, let us say, a second or a third lot of bacteria. Then they do something else along with that. And most importantly, as we talked about, the microbiome, meaning the genetic material of all these microbes, also impacts our genes. So, what are they all doing together, and how are they impacting our physiological symptoms? So, basically, we talked about blood glucose levels. So, what are all the different, let us say, all the different carbohydrate processing, bacteria in the gut? What are they doing, and how are they processing the carbohydrates we eat? And how is that changing my blood glucose levels or anyone's blood glucose levels? So that is how are they impacting other systems in the body? So that is basically, so who is there? Who are their friends? What are they doing together? And how are they impacting all the other systems in the human body?
And that's a great framework, and it makes it sound like we can just go in and take a microscope and go, oh, Fred's there and Fran's there, and they're hanging out with Sally, and they're playing softball, and they're helping you in this way, right? But let's manage a few expectations about the gut microbiome, because we did start off saying, like, this knowledge of the gut microbiome and what's going on in there is pretty new in the world. So, what do you wish people knew that they don't know about the gut microbiome?
First and foremost, food has the biggest impact on the gut microbiome. And on another episode, we'll talk about all the other things that, that impact this. But because food is something that we can control to a great extent, food has the biggest impact. And people sometimes, what a lot of my patients do that they, instead of focusing on food, they want to go looking for the magic supplement, the magic probiotic. Tell me one gut healthy supplement I can take and all my problems will go away. No, that doesn't exist. That is one of the big things that, because food sometimes seems like, oh, it's just food. It's not just food. Food is so many different things. And the other thing is, this is what a lot of we have a lot of patients who will come with a gut microbiome report so they can test the gut microbiome. In fact, on another episode, we have someone from a gut microbiome testing company who talks about it. It's like they'll do the test and they'll come and say, "Now, doctor, if I just change my food based on this test, like this bacteria is there and this one is there, if I just do that, will I be fine?" I said, "Well, depends on what you're eating now, number one. Number two is we haven't reached that level of, nuance where looking at someone's gut microbiome report, we can say, okay, kale is a better food for you than broccoli. Versus in general, we can say kale and broccoli are good for us unless you are sensitive to that particular food." So we haven't reached that point where we look at a gut microbiome report and say, this is missing, this is there, this is what you eat. Eat broccoli, don't eat Brussels sprouts, eat kale, don't eat this. Or we can say that, okay, I am going to create a custom compounded probiotic for you, which is going to be specifically for you and for your gut. And once you do those things, you're going to be absolutely perfect and fine for the rest of your life. So we are not there yet.
Yeah, and I think that that is really what a lot of people, because there's so much information out there, a lot of people believe that we are at this point where we can say, oh, you have 1% of this and you need 2%. We're all individuals. And there's an individual level that's going to be right for you and for me and for somebody else. And so it's going to take the nuance is going to have to come from ourselves in terms of what's working for us and what's not working for us. And if we certainly have some symptoms, some low-level inflammation, some gut symptoms, or some chronic skin issue or chronic inflammation that's usually linked to the low levels of chronic inflammation, then we should be looking at our gut and especially starting to look at food to move the needle on that, right? And there's a multi-pronged approach, but as we're talking, food is like a really nice big lever to pull to move you forward in this. It's not, nothing is a magic wand, right?
No.
Much as we'd like that. So
I know.
what should people do, right? Should we talk about some actions they can take around food?
Yeah, and you and I have talked a lot about food on our podcast, but the aspect that we get excited about is the behavioral change aspect of it. So, Andrea, I would like, where would you start? Let us say you are doing it for yourself and you want to make some food changes.
Yeah,
Where would
so
you start first,
yeah, where would I start first? I would, and from a behavior design perspective, and I'll just say I've made many changes over the years in my diet, and I use diet in turn just to simply mean the food I choose to eat, right? This is not diet as in weight loss. The food diet in terms of
No.
food I choose to eat. So in terms of the food I choose to eat, I often start with the easiest place. So if I'm making a change, I pick the easiest place, the easiest meal, I'll say, to start with, and then the easiest change to make at that meal. So for me, it's breakfast, and I shifted my breakfast. I used to have many, many years ago, very starchy breakfast, and then I started to add protein in. So I didn't take out my starchy stuff, but I added a protein. Now, I want to just be very real. I don't have a magic, I don't have a chef, so I didn't have someone to make me protein. So it took me a little bit to figure out what protein would I be okay eating at breakfast. And then how would I make sure it was ready for me, because my morning has its own rhythm and I don't want to cook a full meal at breakfast. So I had to do a little bit of thinking on it. So to share the journey, it's I planned a time on my calendar to think about what I might want to have for breakfast and then write down what I could try that week. And I just planned it for a week. So I made it easy on myself. So it's like, this is not a 10-year change. I'm just going to try this for a week. And so I could plan out on Sunday what I was going to eat for a week. I planned out when I had high motivation what I was going to cook and how I was going to have that available. And then it made it very easy for me to add that protein. And keep in mind, I didn't let go of my other stuff. I just added the protein in. And then I just noticed how I felt. And I would suggest starting where it's easiest for you. If it's dinner, if dinner's easiest for you, then start at dinner and make one small change. Put a one-time action on your calendar at a time that's convenient for you to think through the process. And I think the other thing, and you and I have talked about this, Shabnam, is BJ's idea of super fridge. And we say super pantry as well, because not all the foods you want to eat are on in the fridge. And his super fridge concept was to only keep food in his fridge that was on his game plan, his eating game plan, that he felt was healthy for him to eat, that fueled him, that gave him energy. And so it's going to look different for you. And it even from the time BJ created Superfridge until now, and that's been a while, his Superfridge looks different. It contains different foods in it because he's changed what fuels him. So the concept behind Superfridge and Super Pantry, only having foods that are okay for you to eat by your own metric, healthy for you to eat, or on your game plan, or things that fuel you and give you energy, is a great concept, but many people would resist it because it can be very hard to do. So here's my suggestion, is that when you have that high motivation, when you're feeling like, yes, I am committed, I want to do this, you harness that high motivation and go to your pantry and clean out all your foods and immediately then take them someplace, throw them in the trash, give them to your neighbor, something like that. And
Andrea,
if
I'm
you
going to interrupt you there. Giving it away to the neighbor or to the food bank is something I have a lot of conflict about. I don't know how to process that.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. And here's the way, because I don't like to give away what I consider unhealthy foods. But I also recognize that not everybody eats the same way I do. And I don't judge them for that. So, but you're going to do what's right for you. And I think the biggest problem is people afraid to throw it away. And really, it's waste if it goes in you, and it's waste if it goes in the trash. So I really encourage you to think about it. It's like you can't put the waste inside you and value your body less than you value a trash can, right? So, but do again, we're about behavior matching. If this isn't a fit for you, then don't do it, right? Make the small changes. But when you're setting up your environment by creating the pantry, then pantry that's clean, super pantry, super fridge. Then, when you do have that desire, it makes it harder for you to do, and impossible actually, if you really have super fridge and super pantry, to do the unwanted behaviors. And so you have more success with your new healthier habits that you're trying to create. And ultimately, that success can lead to success. Like you can feel very empowered making those changes. And then you can dovetail, weave them together where you're making some small changes with the big changes. Because what you'll find, and we've seen this in the Tiny Habits 5-Day program, is that even doing small behaviors, small changes can lead to bigger ripple effects in your life. And once you experience yourself being successful, success can lead to success.
And success leads to higher motivation as well. So we don't have to rely on motivation and willpower only.
Exactly. And the other thing I would say is be kind to yourself if you slip up. Right? And it's not, we're human and we're not robots. And that's what's beautiful about us. So you have a super fridge and super pantry, but you're at the store and you really want those crackly chips and you buy them and you eat them. That's okay. Right? Don't dwell on that, because ultimately you've really transformed your pantry already, and you've probably transformed your eating. And really, the process of just even small changes, eating more healthily, according to you, is the progress, right? And
I
that's
know.
really what you want to focus on.
Yeah, and Andrea, you brought up so many interesting things, and like my brain's going all directions. So with this thing we talked about giving away food. Recently, I was having this conversation with my neighbor, and she loves bread, and she said, "Oh, did you?" She's not glu she doesn't she eats gluten, so she said, "Oh, did you know that you get some really tasty gluten-free bread?" I said, "Yeah, I know. I know Costco has some, and this one has, and that one has." I said, "Yeah, one problem is, these are all huge loaves of bread, and if you get them, we don't want to eat the whole lot, and then I feel bad about, throwing away the rest." So I said, "Oh, good. I can s give them to you and not feel guilty about, throwing away
That's
food."
amazing. And that's a great, like when I hear you talking about it, I think that's a great one-time action to do where it's like, hey, you know that there's something good, but there's too much of it. See who's in your circle. Let's ask around who's in your circle that you could share some of the larger quantities for, and it can be a win-win, right? If you're single and you have too much of something and then you keep it in your cupboard, even if it's something that's healthy and you don't want to freeze it, I'm the queen of forgetting things in the freezer.
Oh,
See
yeah,
if you
so am I.
trade your neighbor, right? If you make a little to a trade, my neighbor next door, I make something. If there's too much of it, I give her some. Same thing for me. So we get some variety. Sometimes we swap recipes and we eat similarly. So if you feel uncomfortable about that, I think that's a really good idea to share so that there's not as much food waste. Any final thoughts on what we should do as we wrap this episode on the gut microbiome?
Yeah, so we talked about, how food has the biggest impact. Now, I know most of our listeners know this very well, that eating processed food, like a lot of, food that are ready to eat and, high in carbohydrate, pasta, bread, pizzas, cakes, and pastries, that is
Yum.
obviously not good food. But, Andrea, you mentioned that to eat absolutely completely unprocessed food, we will need either a cook or a chef.
Yes.
So, one thing that I wanted to highlight is we talk a lot about, eating adequate protein. We've talked about protein before because protein and good quality fat don't raise our blood glucose levels. But, when we talking about processing and minimal processing, when you said, our mornings are not always free, I usually sometimes have a protein drink. Now, that is, in strictest definition, that is processed, right?
Right,
But
right.
most days, if I don't have that protein drink, because that gives me more proteins than only food, and I eat meat and fish, and I eat non-vegetarian food, so it's not like I have the challenges of a person who's vegetarian or vegan. But even that, it makes it difficult for me to achieve my protein requirement. So the protein drink is it that's processed, but it is still
Right.
better than me having, and Andrea, there's another term that I love that you use, the gateway food. So if I
Oh.
don't start my day with a protein and start with, actually eggs are also fine, but it's, for some reason I'm not able to do that, like I'm in a big hurry. It's much easier to just shake the protein drink and have it. But if I don't start my day with a high protein, I love your, Andrea, will you talk about your gateway
I
food?
will talk about my gateway food. Tell us what happens when you don't start your day with protein, though.
The rest of my day, I don't make as good, food choices. Like I might end up eating the gluten-free tortilla with, make it into a roll when I should not have been actually eating that one.
Yeah, and that and that's really, I think what you're highlighting here too is that it's your feedback, right? And sometimes people would judge themselves for, oh, I ate that chips or I ate the, I just snacked on those things that I normally wouldn't do. But this is your gut microbiome speaking to you. Right, your gut microbiome is saying like I like the protein, and then it doesn't call to you to have the other foods. Now, for me, pizza is my gateway food. Where if I have pizza and I love pizza and pizza is a delicious part of life, I'm going to just say that here. 3 days later, I've done this enough. 3 days later, I probably want to eat a whole pan of brownies. I just huge, huge sugar cravings. And it doesn't start with like I'm good for 2 days and then on third day, it's the pizza the first day. Then the next day it's like, oh, I'll have a little sweet treat. Then the next day it's like I'll have a little more sweet treat. And by day three, I am looking for the cocoa powder and thinking I'm going to make a whole pan of brownies to eat them all myself. And it took a while to figure that out, that pizza was my gateway food. And it's not that I don't have pizza anymore. It's just that I remind myself, I have a habit of saying, this is delicious pizza. Tomorrow, if you get a craving, remember that it's just the pizza talking. And so don't give in to that craving. And then the next day, when I have a craving, I say, oh, remember, you had pizza yesterday. This craving is not real. It's from the pizza. And I also remind myself that if I don't, 2 days later, I'm going to want to eat a whole pan of brownies. Right. And then it's, most of the time I catch myself, but every now and then day three comes around and I go, oops, I never eat the whole pan, but I will have like more sugary treats, but then I just recover. Right. I go back to my protein and things like that. I think one other thing that you highlighted is this concept that I'll call good, better, best. And I don't even love the term best, but think about it that way. Like maybe best is that you have high quality protein in the morning that's not from a protein powder that's not processed, but better, maybe that's best, right? But still, having the protein powder is better than just having a carb alone, right? And so that concept will serve you well in terms of not beating yourself up, in terms of moving toward the things that are better for you. And you don't ever have to achieve the best. You could, and likely if you move to better, then you will suddenly start having all these things that move into the better statement and even into the best statement. And again, I'm not a big fan of best, but maybe best for you. And that's a great way to think about it.
Yeah, that's perfect. And so just, in summarizing what Andrea and I have been talking about, a lot of things. So we talked about what Dr. BJ Fogg calls his super fridge, and we added a super pantry. So number one is controlling our environment. So basically it is, setting us ourselves up for success rather than, giving in to temptations and feeling bad about it later. And the other important thing is, no one is 100% perfect every day.
Right.
So we need to give ourselves the permission. I'm quite comfortable with that, but I know a lot of my patients are like, I cheated. I said, no, you're never going to use that term, cheated, with
Right.
food.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just ate differently today. I ate out of plan. Another, strategy that I must admit, I'm not always mindful of it, is if I have eaten something out of plan today, I try not to compound it. So let us say, I had biryani, and biryani is like rice, it's got carbohydrates. Of course, there is some meat in it. The same day, I won't eat biryani as well as a dessert and
Right.
eat like late in the evening. So I can't say I always do it all the time because sometimes it's not practical. But at least if we remember, today I
Yeah.
haven't slept well. I must start with the day with the protein so that I don't set myself up for failure, all those things.
Exactly. And even I think most people, what you, the compounding is a very common thing. Where, oh, I had the brownie. Well, I might as well have the rest of the pan, and I'll start again tomorrow. And really, whatever quote unquote slip up you did is really not as bad as co the compounding, right? What we beat our, what people can beat themselves up over the initial one. I loved your summary on that. And we have a few more episodes on the gut microbiome. So keep an eye out for those. And we want to thank you all for listening. Obviously, like, rate, share, and subscribe. And all of these podcasts are at drkarmd.com/podcast. That's drkarmd.com/podcast. Cheers, everyone.
Thank you, and bye.